You're listening to the Spicy Dividend.
Hey, 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 episode 21 of the Spicy Dividend podcast. Don't know how long this one's going to be. My voice is quite crappy because I am at the end of a cold and the mucus is dripping down the throat. Speaking of dripping, we're going to get into that because I decided to drip all of my investments, all of that and more. Episode 21, Blackjack Spicy Dividend Podcast. And all right, so Robinhood announced fractional shares, and by the time I'm recording this, it's Wednesday, December 18th. It should be going live, well, they're going to start rolling it out to the early people anyway, tomorrow or Friday, the 20th. They said this week they're going to start rolling it out. It's Wednesday. It hasn't been rolled out to anyone yet. And, oh my God, I am so excited for this. I think this is just, it might get all major players to eventually do this. M1 was kind of the first one. I mean, there's been many brokerages that offered it before, but M1 was the first in the modern era to pretty much have a sole focus on fractional shares. Fidelity announced, I believe it's Fidelity announced, that they are going to do fractional shares as well. That's not in the plans for this year. That'll be next year sometime. But Robinhood announced, and it seemed like it was very sudden. It's like, hey, we're going to have fractional shares as low as a dollar, and it's going to be next week. So this came out last week. It seemed very sudden. I don't know. Maybe I'm just falling behind because I don't really use Robinhood that much anymore. I only use it as a watch list at this point. But it's pretty remarkable. I am super excited for it. I'm not going to lie. There was early articles that said you could invest as low as a cent, but I'm pretty sure it's as low as a dollar. That's what's been coming out of Robinhood's social media accounts. And it's funny, Robinhood social media actually replied to me on Twitter because I was like, oh my God, it's coming out next week, question mark. And they replied with a little gif saying, you better believe it. So what am I planning on doing with it? So I am going to actually be starting a total return fund. I'm going to treat this as in a retirement account. It's going to be very small, not anywhere close to my portfolio that I have right now. But who knows? It could grow quite dramatically in the future. You know my experimental nature. I wouldn't mind having this portfolio and my dividend high dividend yield portfolio go head-to-head and see kind of what happens. You know what I mean? So right now, my main portfolio yields about 5.7%. Pretty high for a lot of people out there, but for someone who invests in high yield, that's actually standard or even below average if you're a high yield investor, 5.7% for your total overall portfolio. Keep in mind, I have a decent chunk of my portfolio in bonds right now, so that is dragging the yield quite a bit down. I imagine if I didn't have any bonds, my yield would be roughly 7%. So, like I said, it's a high yield portfolio with the purpose of being high yields. Duh. So what would go in the Robinhood Total Return Fund? So I announced it on Twitter, and I might be, you know, I'm not, obviously I can change my mind what I want to do with it because it's brand new. I don't have anything invested in it right now. Originally the plan was minimum of a dollar a day and invest like pretty much everything into Noble, ticker symbol NOBL, which is just a ETF of dividend aristocrat companies. So companies that have been paying or increasing their dividends annually for quite some time. I believe the qualifications for Noble are 15 years. I could be wrong about that. I got to research it again. Obviously, I don't own it yet, so I'm not, you know, I don't know 100% of the fund or whatever. I know it's relatively a modern fund. It doesn't have too much of a history, but, you know, typically dividend aristocrat companies tend to do well in times of recession. So I imagine the backlog, if there were such a thing, would be quite well on it. Anyway, you know, if you've been listening to my podcast and if you truly believe in what I believe in, dividend growth investing is great for total return investing. It's very comparable to the S&P 500 if you're just investing in like SPY or something. I think dividend aristocrat, dividend growth investing is very good for total return. And that's what I want this fund to be. I want it to be a total return fund because I do want to diversify my styles as well. So a couple episodes back, I harped on, you know, comparing it to sports system. And it's like stick to your system and don't deviate from it. Well, if I'm using an entirely different brokerage, then the system itself could be different. So you might be wondering, you know, is that kind of hypocritical? Because you could ultimately just have one giant portfolio and combine the techniques. Well, I have somewhat of an experimental nature. So who knows? So right now the major portfolio is at 46,000, my major individual portfolio. I don't count retirement or anything into that, or emergency fund or whatnot. 46,000 in my individual portfolio with high yields, and a dollar a day, that's not going to grow, you know, fast at all, unless I flip the switch and I pretty much just focus on this total return, just investing in like Noble every single day or whatever fund that I defend or, you know, ultimately end up going with. What if I grew that? What if I didn't touch my other portfolio and I just hammered this one until that caught up into like the 45,000 range and just go for there? Look, the ultimate goal is to live off of dividend income, correct? So that's why I always harp on these dividend growth investors, is because, you know, pretty much everyone who invests in dividends and solely dividends, the goal is to receive some of that dividend income to help alleviate a lot of expenses in your life, right? It gives you financial freedom because you have this money that's coming in, this passive income. You're doing essentially nothing, even though I don't believe in such thing as passive income. That is the passive income nonetheless. What am I getting at? These dividend growth investors, they typically have the buy and hold forever mentality, which is correct, but I always struggle with, because they start with such low amounts and, you know, the yield on cost is only very significant if your initial contributions are very significant. So if you start out with $5,000, yeah, your yield on cost might be amazing, but by the time 30 years rolls around, it, you know, the yield on cost on $5,000, it might be great, but the actual cash distributed to you, you know, it's going to be marginal, because at the end of the day, it's only $5,000. And if your yield on cost is like, you know, 20% at that point, you know, it's great, but it's what? What's 10% of $5,000? So that's 500, double that, it's 1,000. So 20% is $1,000 a year. You know, you're not, yeah, that's really nothing to write home about. But nonetheless, I always said, there's nothing wrong if you wanted to do dividend growth investing for the total return and then take that huge lump sum that you get at the end, because theoretically the growth should be a lot higher. So you get a higher lump sum amount and then you take that and allocate it to higher paying dividends. That's kind of what a lot of people secretly do, although they don't like to admit that, you know, dividend growth investing isn't the one all be all. They kind of want to take the growth, cut it off when it's high, and then invest in the high yielders and live off that. Maybe I'm kind of getting a little bit of that mentality with this Robinhood portfolio once they do introduce fractional shares, or at least it rolls out to me. I'd be kind of interested. It'd be kind of experimental if I just solely invest it into this fund and, you know, let's say I miraculously get it even to where my portfolio is now, and, you know, they're both invested $46,000. You know, by that point, because it would take me a couple years to do that. It took me 2 years to get my individual portfolio now from $300 to $46,000. So it would take another couple years to get the other one up and running. But, you know, by that time, there's probably going to be economic downturn. There's probably going to be a recession. I mean, we're going to have the election. And if someone like Bernie Sanders gets in office, I mean, the market is just going to get obliterated. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think Bernie has any shot at winning. But, you know, crazy shit happens. Nobody really saw Trump winning either, to be honest. I know I didn't. When he first, you know, declared that he was running, I was like, is this guy serious? But, hey, shit happens. You have to be prepared for this kind of stuff. And by the way, yes, I am sticking to my guns that if Bernie Sanders is the Democratic nominee come election time, I am selling out of my stocks completely. I am 100% going to cash. I am, why risk it? Okay. And look, this isn't really that big of a deal. I mean, people are saying like, oh my God, you got to buy and hold forever. What are you doing? And it's like, keep in mind, a lot of the stocks that I'm buying right now are at all-time highs. So, you know, if I sell, the tax complications really aren't going to be that bad. I mean, yeah, I'll have a tax bill, don't get me wrong. But if I sold out completely and then just held all cash, you know I'm safe. Because if Bernie does somehow get elected, I don't care what camp you're on, Democrat, Republican, I myself am independent. You got to admit, the market is going to get obliterated if Bernie gets in office, okay? Like, when you call for a tax on every single trade, I mean, Wall Street, why? First of all, it's such a dumb thing to consider, but I mean, why would anyone, and I mean anyone on Wall Street, want that guy to win? Anyway, I don't want to get too political, and I'm sorry for coughing my mouth. Like I said, and the cold, I'm dying here. Let me take a sip of this cancer Pepsi here. All right. I'll tell you what. After drinking diet soda, I cannot go back to regular. Not because of like the sugar or the sweetness or anything. Diet Coke and Diet Pepsi, and I know this because I worked at Coca-Cola for 3 years, the carbonation is much stronger in diet drinks. I don't know if you've noticed that. And it's typically a lot cooler when being processed off the lines, Diet Coke is. So the combination of being naturally colder and stronger carbonation, I don't know, it's just a lot more appealing to me. Yes, cancer be damned. Anyway, damn you aspartame. Anyway, I've currently decided to drip all of my investments that I have in my individual portfolio on E-Trade. So even the ones that are already bloated, like my precious PCI, my PIMCO Dynamic Credit Income Fund, even though it's already giving me $99 a month and it is way too bloated, as in it has way too much allocation in my portfolio right now, I've decided to drip it, let the speed of the compounding really get in there, especially since a huge chunk, I think 14 out of 17 of my holdings are paying monthly. The drip is just going to, you know, it's just going to speed things up a lot faster. And another reason why I decided to do the drip is because I own a lot of bond funds. And, you know, you don't get huge yields from that. And not only do you not get huge yields from it, typically bond ETFs in terms of dollar cost is higher. Like I think the bond fund, its ticker symbol bond, BOND, it's PIMCO's total bond fund, it's around $108 a share. And you know, you have to own a shit ton of that to get $108 in dividends. It's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. So I figured it's best, you know, why would I want to punish my bonds? Let the reinvestment just go into it, compound as much as you possibly can with those bond ETFs, and just let it go for them. That's another major reason why I decided to drip. It's because, you know, if I get $100 from PCI, I don't necessarily want to buy one share of a bond ETF, right? That's just how I look at it. And yeah, I know I could have just stayed on M1 Finance and not have to worry about this kind of stuff, but at the same time, you know, I'm loving all of the features that I'm getting on E-Trade, a traditional brokerage. I'm loving my income estimator tool. By the way, I am up to, at least according to the income estimator tool, $219 a month on average in dividend income. That is phenomenal. I am so happy about that. Everything is just going so well. I remember when I started the cash flow challenge, I believe I was at like $180 a month. Now I'm up to $219 a month. And that was not that long ago when I started the challenge. It was like, what, maybe 4 or 5 months? Maybe 5 to 6. But you get what I'm saying. $219 a month. I mean, just think of it this way. My portfolio started at $300 total. Total portfolio value, $300. And now it is yielding an average of $219 a month. It'll be pretty cool once I reach the $300 a month, just because I can say that it's like, look, this is what it started at. Now I'm yielding that every single month. It'll be pretty cool. And again, that's why, you know, the high yield investing is such an allure to me. I have the gambling mentality, but high yield without going too crazy it's just awesome to see that compounding go so much quicker. It's so much more rewarding. But like I said, I'm going to experiment a little with the Robinhood. I'm so glad they're doing fractional shares. I got to be honest, you know, a lot of people give Robinhood shit. I love their platform. I love their, you know, I love their app, I should say. I love their app. I really do. I think the interface is so sleek. I think it is so easy to use. I mean, when I hate the E-Trade app. I cannot stress that enough. And the reviews on the App Store, at least on Android's side, you know, also back that up. The E-Trade app blows. It is so unaesthetic, but then again, so is the website too. Very unaesthetic. Robinhood, you know, you can tell that they are marketing or aiming their product towards millennials. They want to get as many people involved as possible, and that's probably why they're doing the fractionals. It's more appealing to millennials. If they want to buy something like a Tesla, they can put $10 into it and just say, hey, you know, I love Tesla. Here's $10. Let's get into it. But the interface is just, it's so much easier to navigate. And if you're going to do simple stuff like just buying a share, it's so much easier. It really is. It's cut and dry, no bullshit. I do really like Robinhood's app. Who knows? Maybe I'll buy some Bitcoin on it, some internet Chuck E. Cheese tokens. But that's a later story down the line. Let me take another sip here. So yeah, this should be very interesting. One last thing before I let y'all go. This is a very short episode because my throat is killing me. M1 Finance. I am so grateful for M1 Finance. It gave me the ability to build up my portfolio so much. I know I switched brokerages. I am honestly concerned about their future with Robinhood getting fractional shares. I mean, with Robinhood getting fractional shares, there is almost no reason to have M1 Finance over Robinhood. The one advantage I will say, and you know, you could argue if even is an advantage over Robinhood, is the referral program. And let me just say, I've received, you know, I'm pretty much done now since I'm off M1 Finance and I got rid of all my referral links. Because I don't feel like that's right if I keep my referral links yet I don't use it. I've received 185 referrals. Thank you so much to everyone who used that link. You know, there was specials in that time period too where it wasn't just $10. There was a couple 20s, even a couple 25s in there. Easily $2,000 worth of referral income alone. Seriously, that is amazing. You have no idea how much that fueled the growth. And to be honest, that was like the number one thing that kept me going on YouTube for such a long time was those M1 Finance referrals. And, you know, my time was pretty much up because here comes Joseph Carlson and his super exciting videos where he answers first grader questions. but he's going to take a... I don't... Someone tell me if he's already shown how many referrals that he's gotten. I highly doubt he'll show up. But he has to make a killing from referrals. I mean, he has... I don't know how the hell his channel exploded the way it has. Because his videos are really not that good. I don't understand why people flock to him versus PPC Ian. Because they have very long videos and they're similar styles. Maybe it's just because he shows his portfolio value, which I think is kind of bullshit. Because let's be real, he's rich. I mean, if you can invest $2,000 a month without sweating, you kind of have money already. And I think we can deduct that PPC Ian is also quite wealthy, but PPC Ian's knowledge is way more useful. I mean, he's gone through the experience of a couple recessions now. He's been through the trials and tribulations. Plus, I mean, valedictorian from Stanford. I mean, are you really doubting his ability versus, we don't, like, a full stack developer in Joseph? I mean, come on. Like, I know that's not right. I know your background doesn't necessarily mean you're any less knowledgeable at certain areas versus someone else. But I mean, why? I mean, why would you trust one like Joseph over PBC Ian? Like, he's... Anyway, that's it for this podcast, episode 21, Blackjack. Sorry it could not be longer. My throat is, I'm dying right now. Like, it feels like, before I went on this, it felt like someone rubbed sandpaper on the back of my throat. And every time I try to talk without coughing, it just gets drier and scratchier every single decibel that comes out of my mouth. So, hope you enjoyed this one. I'll see everyone in the next episode.